This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Politrics.
Hey, Tom. Happy Friday. Welcome to Wow, What a Week. So, because last week, Botsang took ill and couldn't do Politrics, we decided that this week we're going to give you a double dose of Politrics on the Friday and the Saturday. So welcome to part one of hashtag Politrics. Botsang Modimwame Moilo, welcome back.
Yes.
There's a bunch of Libyans here, just under 100. They've been in a training camp, a security training camp.
Yes.
In Mpumalanga, near White River. And we're told that despite the fact that their work permit said they were here to do a security training course, they were receiving military training.
Yes.
And, you know, for me, it becomes when and how did intelligence even miss this?
Do we have the intelligence?
And why did it take so long for there to be a realization that, no, man, there's something happening here? Because had the locals not complained that there's a bunch of guys that they kind of look Indian.
Yes, they actually said, the locals said they look like Pakistani.
Yeah, yeah, they said they kind of look Indianish, but they speak a different language. But they keep disappearing into the mountain, and then they'll come out, cause trouble, and then disappear into the mountain.
Well, Fresh, first of all...
In fact, a friend of mine works in the intelligence arena, and she says that when they raided that place, it smelt like, why are these people not bathing even? She says that place was like squalid.
Stench.
Yeah. It was a stench. Yes. It was just, yeah.
Well, Fresh, you know, for me, it started when those people got the visas.
Yeah.
And for me, that was they should have given red flags.
Sure.
First of all, having have worked in the environment, when foreign nationals apply for visas to come to South Africa, whether it's a study visa or work visa or what, in this instance, the highlight could have been those people applied instead of Tripoli because of the conditions and the situation in Libya, they applied in the neighboring country,
okay.
in Morocco. They didn't apply in Libya, in Tripoli, at the capital.
Yes, yes.
I don't know if the South African embassy or consular services are functional in Tripoli, but I assume that the reason they applied in the neighboring countries because they couldn't get the service in Tripoli. Mm. That should have been the first thing that could have been red flags. Number two, when people come and apply for visas at a foreign mission and they come in a group, already that calls for vetting those particular individuals and where they are going to. Mm. Because if 95 people come to a consular service of an embassy or a consulate and apply for, you know, study permits to go and study or be trained as security. Why is it study permits? Because it's our training, so it falls under study permits. It could have highlighted, you know, Libyans applying in Morocco to study in South Africa. That already should have sent the message from the Department of Home Affairs through the embassy, or the embassy through the Department of Home Affairs to the National State Security, you know, agency.
Sure.
But we should also highlight the fact that the lady from the Free State, who's a former policeman who has been in hiding and undercover and all that, who was exposing corruption in the police,
okay.
Michelle, I think her surname is Michelle.
Okay.
She came out last week when this thing happened and said, no, the police knew about this thing because it's one of the things they highlighted. She even mentioned on how they had a recording as well as a memory stick that was given to the then Minister of Intelligence in the presidency, and that is Isikodwa.
Sure.
So this thing has been on the radar of the police before the locals complained. What did the police and intelligence do with this? For me, it's nothing until the locals started complaining. She said, there's very weird happenings in those mountains. But it has now come out clear that actually the security regulator of South Africa has come out during the course of this week and said, one, that school was not regulated. So
okay.
It was an illegal school.
Ah, okay.
Secondly, they've come and they said, even the form of training that school had listed to be offering, whether it's security training, before we even arrive at military training, it is not within the curriculum of RISA, the agency. And also, the modules and the curriculum they were offering is not South African standards. Mm. It's based on foreign standards, foreign, all those things. But also now these people, they were giving a military training in the country.
Yeah, but we know Libya is a mess.
Yes.
So maybe our security training would have been too diluted. So they decided to maybe add a module that includes military.
the military.
So they can properly be security people in Libya.
It is illegal in South Africa to do that. You cannot give military training outside the parameters of the National Defense Force.
Sure, which makes sense.
No, it's an illegal operation. Mm. But you see, what was also funny about this whole thing is the fact that the police or the NPA or the courts, whoever law enforces, they then enforce the law on the 95 Libyans for bypassing or getting out of the line of their visas for doing something they were not in the country for.
Sure.
But what about those who invited them? Because you get invited, you get housed, and you get trained.
And who funded the thing?
You understand? Who funds the whole project? Mm. Look, there's claims, and nobody has refuted them, that even the presidency knew about this thing long before, and which begs me to worry afresh that, are we saying we are training people in this country who may be insurgents, who may be used as these rented military people like...
Mercenaries.
The mercenaries in the continent. What were those people being trained for? For which benefit of which country or which organization?
What was the end goal?
What was the end goal of them being trained in South Africa? You know, under our noses, under the intelligence of the country. And look at the danger we are sitting with.
Absolutely.
We have a military training facility. I mean, you have seen the videos and the photos of that. It's a full you know, well-vested camp.
Sure.
With everything that mercenaries may be trained there to go and create criminal activities in the continent, which is ravaged by civil and internal wars, and taking advantage of the situation in Libya as well. Because, you know, since the killing of Colonel Gaddafi in Libya, the country has been unstable.
Sure.
And this is becoming a brewing point. We may end up with groups like the Wagner Group, you understand, that are being supported partially by a government and being allowed to operate like a government. And it happens right inside our country, which is, you know, have very stringent rules regarding mercenaries. South Africans are not. Our constitution forbids South Africans to be mercenaries, but it's happening right under our noses.
No, but in terms of the mercenary stuff, I mean, we know it's a known, it's not even a secret that there's a lot of guys with training that are in Iraq, for instance, that have worked in Afghanistan, that were hired guns
in Angola and in other places.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, it might be illegal for citizens to be allowed to be out there doing such jobs, but they're out there doing
jobs. It's happening,
and it's easy money
for our former military personnel, you know, frustrated soldiers. It's easy money as well, especially in a country with economic challenges like South Africa, high unemployment.
Sure.
And you know, I'm sitting at home for 2 years with a military background. If somebody comes and puts $1,000 in front of me, why would I refuse it?
Absolutely.
And when it can feed my children. So those are some of the challenges we are faced with.
But we're told deporting them is not an option, though, because we need to get to the bottom of this, right?
Look, they can't be deported because now they are going to be facing criminal charges, you know, and there's that whole thing. But the Libyan government has tried to intervene into this whole thing to say, if your government and your system allowed our people to be there under false pretense, when they departed Libya, they definitely knew that they are going for military training.
Sure.
So it's our system that allowed them to be into the country for military training while they were under the disguise of being a security personnel training. But also, you sit and think, you know, if I was a consular official issuing those visas, I would ask myself serious questions. Mm. Why would a person come from the northern part of the continent to come be a security official at the southern part of the continent?
Sure.
Well, I mean, how many more countries in the Sahel area or in the northern part of Africa can provide basic security training to an extent that you want to go and train a security in South Africa, as if our security training it's one of the best in the continent?
So it's basically you. Is this you saying that this is one of the many unanswered questions?
Yes.
And one of the things that make this thing not make sense?
It doesn't make sense that people can come out of Libya to go and apply for visas to be trained as security. You know, Fresh, when we issue visas, There's a lot of questions that you ask yourself before you can authorize that. And I can tell you, the authorization of those visas did not end at the embassy or the diplomatic mission where it was issued. No. For such a bunch and a number of people, it gets referred to headquarters.
Sure.
So somebody sitting in Pretoria had provided authorization for those visas to be issued by the diplomatic mission or the consular office abroad.
Sure.
And the country cannot sit. You know, the security cluster as well as the, you know, a diplomatic and consular services cluster, they cannot come and say they did not know that those people are in the country and receiving military training. I mean, it's impossible because of the cross checks that you go through before you can issue that visa or that permit.
Sure. Now, speaking of military training and things, guns and security, there's been a lot of action in KZN when it comes to fighting crime.
Yes.
And there are even suggestions that are the cops in KZN a tad trigger happy? But then there's also people saying, but if you're going to shoot at cops, what do you think is going to happen?
It's going to happen, yeah.
And what should happen? And then there are even people saying, but could these possibly be extrajudicial killings to get rid of the problematic people?
Criminals. Supposed to be criminals.
Where do you stand on this? Because for me, I feel the cops are doing what needs to be done.
Yeah. That's a tough one. Fresh, let me put it this way.
Yes, sir.
We have been having in South Africa police killings. People have been killing policemen. South Africa is one of the nations, in my view, that we disrespect the men and women in blue uniform.
Yeah.
We have seen policemen being slapped. We have seen policemen being disarmed. And those arms end up in the hands of the criminals. That's one element. The second element is we are the world capital of murder. You know, I think after Colombia and whatever country, we are number two in the world with murder. We are a very violent society. Generally, South Africans are a very violent society.
We are violent. There is a lot of lawlessness.
Yes.
And there's a lot of disregard for even very basic rules.
But basic, yes, understand.
But still, we're the same people who are going to complain.
People resort to violence in any form. I mean, we have had an incident in the past week where one of the flamboyant pastors walked into a school, a primary school, with pangas, machetes, and you can see what do people resort to. Now, getting into the discussion of the KZN killings, I've seen it flowing into Eastern Cape in the last 3 weeks.
Okay,
it's now happening in the Eastern Cape, where the police are getting into combat with supposed to be criminals, and they're all wiped off. No survivor, nobody's alive. Now, one of the questions that I raised in the past was, you know, it's so funny that we capture everything in South Africa. Everything.
Yeah.
Everything. Whenever there's political violence, political rallies, whether it's Mujaivo or what, everything is captured one way or the other again. But these killings, and this has been my concern, not even once we have seen a video or photos or a recording of them shooting at the police and police shooting back. Nobody is there to capture that, including the police themselves.
But let me I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
We hear that Botsang is hiding out in the house there.
Mm-hmm.
And we approach the house.
Yes.
And let's give the police the benefit of the doubt. Then shots are fired at the cops from said house. And we fire back.
Back, yes.
And because we have training, we do this for a living.
Yeah.
We have the upper hand already.
Yeah.
And then ta-da, all of you are dead. Who would have been shooting, filming any of that?
Well, first, like I said,
unless you are advocating for bulletproof vests with cameras,
we have been talking about
never be
body
any
cams,
footage.
Body cams,
yes.
Because it can aid in fighting crime. There's been rumors and allegations in the country that some of the criminal activities are committed by the supposed to be law enforcers.
Okay.
And body cams, why is South Africa not moving towards body cams? But despite that...
Yeah, so my question to you is then, who would have filmed all of that?
No, nobody
at 2 in the morning.
At 2 a.m.
Exactly.
But that's another thing. These operations, they happen in the wee hours of, you know, the morning, 2 a.m., 3 a.m.
There's no rule book when we must come in and do what we need to do.
Look, I still believe in the Becky Cele's old school that you cannot take feather dusters and broomsticks to a gun battle.
Yes.
If the police are being shot at by criminals or by whoever, they should retaliate with live rounds.
I would even say give them armed drones.
You understand? So the question is, when it is becoming a routine,
you know,
criminals, yes, criminals are also human beings.
Yeah.
We should not forget them.
Sure.
Not to say they are good human beings.
Mm.
So they all, when I say they are human beings, I don't say we must feel sorry for them. I'm saying they have what we call letalo, some element of fear in them.
Sure.
Whereby you have been seeing the police murdering people or killing people in self-defense or in retaliation for the last 3-6 months.
Mm.
Okay? Now you are cornered. Do you think all those criminals would not raise a white flag and lie down and say, I'm not shooting back at the police, for them to all be killed at the same time? Are they that brave?
But Botswana, our levels of crime are so... I mean, when you look at how brazen a lot of criminals have become...
Yeah, they're very brazen.
I mean, just last week... there was a gent and his family in the East Rand. They went to a restaurant to eat. Armed people walked into the restaurant, shot guy, took off his Rolex, and drove off.
And drove off.
In the middle of people are eating on a Sunday. That's how brazen they've become. So you think they care that a cop is you think they care? They're going to say, here's a white flag, here's a white flag.
Well, I still have an element of humanity in me that if I know that I'm under fire, in a house surrounded by cops, and I've seen what they've been doing, I will rather go to jail than a bullet going through my spine and my brains. But look, the police in KZN, and I've listened to, what is a provincial commissioner, I think it's Mkhwanazi.
Yes.
I've listened to him, who's one of the most liked policemen in South Africa at the moment. Actually, there's calls that he qualifies to be a national, you know, police commissioner.
Sorry, I spilled some coffee. Hey, my brother, please bring me some tissue there. Or a serviette or something. Do you think we should start selling these mugs, or should they just be for staff?
Well, I've seen people on social media have said they want to order that, and we should make it available for some.
Anyway, carry on. You were saying. I apologize.
I was saying Mkhwanazi was explaining how these people, criminals, have become present, especially in KZN.
They don't care.
They don't care, and how they've been killing police people, and you know, things that are happening in the country, in that province particularly. But also, we should recall that in some of the public matters that has been happening, the previous police minister Becky Cele mentioned something very interesting to say. You know, the way KZN is brazen and brutal, and the killing of human beings there, it's almost like nothing. Almost each and every Nkabi in South Africa comes from KZN.
And Nkabi is an assassin.
Yes, the assassin, you know, saying the hired assassins. They come from KZN. It's not me saying this is the former police minister who comes from KZN himself. And actually, when you look at it, most of them, when they are arrested in any form of criminal, you know, assassinations or murders that are happening in the country, even if they happen in Gauteng or in the Western Cape, or in the Eastern Cape,
in the Northwest, there was
in the Northwest.
Yeah, there was a businessman who was taken out in KZN in Northwest.
In Northwest, yes.
And we're told that it was a KZN Nkabi who was brought in to do the job.
So being a trigger happy, and you know, I've read the story of how these people are being identified as Nkabis, you know, somebody from a rural area who is very fit, who has no value for living and all that, and they just get hurt and paid almost nothing, 2,000 rand, 5,000 rand to go in and kill a human being. But I think the police are very tired there, and they are not taking it anymore to say we are not going to negotiate with criminals anymore.
Sure.
And as old school, you know, policemen are saying, you cannot negotiate or you cannot go to court with the cops.
Mm.
You understand? So if they are dead, there's nobody to talk on their behalf.
Mm.
And there's no case. You understand? But I think this has raised eyebrows.
Mm.
I know one of the universities, pardon me, has come up to say maybe IP then I must start looking a little bit deeper into this whole thing. I wouldn't mind if IPT or anybody looks into, is this real in self-defense or in retaliating, for people to be at easy. Mm. You know, just to put the nation at easy, to say the police are doing what they are supposed to be doing. If you are faced with gunfire, you will retaliate with gunfire. Mm. And to put the nation at easy, I will welcome an inquiry into that, an investigation into that, so that we are satisfied as a nation that these people were attacking the police. What is of importance and credit to the police is that most of these people, if not all, they have been said to be the wanted criminals.
Yes.
So it's not like
They were already
calls to say we are looking for them. They've been wanted criminals and for serious crimes like murder, armed robberies and things. Almost all of them. I've even seen one report actually that said one of those victims was a passerby or an innocent person living in that house, or the owner of the house with tenants in the background. Mm. All of them, they go and hire a house where they combat and conduct their criminal activities from. And police reports have been saying these have been people who have been wanted all the time. So, look, that's up to the police. If they are real, look, anything, and I've said it before, if I have to live on a street and there's a policeman or a soldier with a rifle to safeguard my children and myself in my street where I live, then let it be, because we have become an animal kingdom. You know, our country is very unsafe.
Sure.
And you know, people are being killed and dying every day for like you said, for a Rolex watch. Mm. Well, look, Rolex watch is not a cheap watch, but you can see that those people, what they went there for in the Eastern. They knew that that person wears a Rolex. They that's why they went for the watch and they left.
A part of me thinks, though, for instance, if I want to take your Rolex, do I need to kill you first? Because the fact that this person was taken out first before the watch was grabbed says to me, what if the watch grab is a smokescreen?
It's a smokescreen, yeah.
But that person was a target for whatever other reason.
There's a possibility.
Because it doesn't make sense that if all we want is your watch.
Why do you kill me?
In public.
You know, Fresh, again, when you look at how criminals think, normally a person who will wear a Rolex is supposed to be a wealthy person. Mm. Probably he's got a firearm.
Sure.
So if you are going to try and get the watch, probably think this person is going to retaliate and shoot at me and things like that. But I hear what you are saying. If it was only about the watch, it was a robbery, why didn't they search? Because maybe he's got a gun or other valuable things. It's a complex situation. But the murders and the crime against well-off and famous people and you know, let me say rich people, and it's rising in the country. People are easy target. People are fighting for contracts. People are fighting for businesses and many other things, positions. You know, people kill each other for positions, especially political deployments. To say you remove that person so that I can move into that position, and sadly, this is the kind of society we are living in.
And you know, to show you the levels of crime. We had a gig in Qua about 2 weeks ago.
Yes.
And I needed to take a pee. And one of the security guys said to me, it'll take longer for you to do that in the club because it's packed.
Okay.
So let us take you outside to the parking lot. There's a tree or whatever.
Yeah.
But there was four guys. All of them are armed. The fact that all four of them took out their guns and cocked them while I was taking a wee says to me, Hwanyewa in that area.
Anything could have happened in that area.
And for me, it made me feel very uneasy that I'm taking a wee, but these guys, because obviously they know where they know that area.
They know the area, yeah.
But the fact that they need their guns, they need one up. All of them needed one up. For me, just to take a wee.
It's a cowboy way.
Says to you, we are living in your...
I actually, you know, one of the things that crossed my mind when I was sick, the 3 days I was in bed, I was in bed that I did not even leave my bedroom.
Sure. Right?
And one of the things that crossed my mind was security.
Sure.
As I was sleeping every day, I'm like, but I don't even know what's happening in my yard. Yeah. Well, I know there's dogs. I know there's somebody helping me. And the next thing I was looking for in my weakness was, by the way, where's my gun?
Exactly.
You know, you are in bed, you are sick. I'm supposed to be worried about my health. I was actually worried about where's my gun. Mm. And because that's the only thing I could reach out if something happens. Sure. Imagine in your own house and you live like that. But I, I don't know what can we do about crime in South Africa. Look, there's been debates and talks, laws passed, but the levels of crime in South Africa, and look, it's caused by various things. It's caused by socio-economic issues. And as you say, if people want robbery, if people want to steal my television or my car, why do they kill a person at the end of the day?
Because I was going to say, I think, you know, crime is a global issue.
Yeah.
But the levels of violence that accompanies the crime that happens in SA, for me, is a concern.
Yeah,
the fact that it's that easy to take you out, regardless of what it is I'm taking from you, it is that easy.
And it's okay.
And life goes on.
But the other thing is our justice system. When you look at the punitive measures that we have for murder in this country, look, I'm one of the people who says, Fresh, if you touch my kids, it will be me who goes to court. Because I know in 10 to 15 years, I'll be back on the street and life will be normal. You look at people who have been sentenced to 10, 15 years for murder.
Sure.
You understand? And then they still get parole. I don't say the justice parole system should not work and we must not be a rehabilitation nation, but we should compare that with the level of murder that we are sitting with. To say, people just do it. People murder their spouses, people murder their children and neighbors. And I mean, it's absurd, the situation we are living in, that our punitive measures are not in line with the levels of murder and crime we are faced with. They are not responding to the levels of crime and murder that we have in the country. I mean, we know that the maximum sentence one can serve in South Africa to prison is 25 years. That's the maximum you can go to jail. They keep on running concurrently, and then under 25 years, you still get paroled.
Yeah.
And that's why it's you know, for people who have no life, who have been to prison and back and are on the street, that's why for them, it's, I would rather go back to prison and live well with your taxes and be fed by the taxpayers than to roam around the street and suffer.
Absolutely. Let's move on to the ANC-NWC.
Yes.
They wrapped up the meeting, conference, gathering at the Birchwood Hotel earlier this week.
Yeah.
And one of the things they conceded was the fact that they didn't have a choice but to get into the GNU because of the poor showing at the polls. And that obviously is at the risk of things falling apart, that there's a GNU. But what was the easier crime to commit if the GNU is a crime?
Yeah, well, you know, I like the way you say it, when you say the poor showing at the polls. I think, let me say this, I think the ANC, I had thought this past election was a wake-up call for them. But having followed that workshop or conference of the National Working Committee and seeing the feedback of the president of the party and the comments on the site, I don't think the ANC has
learned a lesson.
I, on a serious note, I thought, you know, I speak to quite a number of them, some in very senior position in NEC, and I think they were shocked by the 40% margin. They knew that they were going to drop. They knew, but they were shocked by the 40%. But I think it was a shock. The shock has ended. They are now back to the real ANC people that we know. The pompousness and the element of arrogance, you can see it reinventing itself again. It's coming out again. The fact that they are still the leading party, they are still the governing party, whether there's GNU or not, the ANC is the governing party. The Democratic Alliance may have drafted the agreement and gave it to the ANC, but the ANC ran with it and invited people to the table. And it has made them think that it will never be worse than. And this is my observation. The ANC thinks it cannot be worse than what it is at the moment. They don't see, they see them bouncing back to more than 40% in future. I don't know what informs them of that.
In fact, I was listening to an interview that Helen Ziller did with Clement Manyathela on Talk Radio 702. And she was talking about how South Africa going forward will never have an outright winner at elections. But I'm also thinking, if there are at least 20 million people that didn't bother to show up to vote, surely that 20 million people that didn't bother to show up to vote could be the swing that might bring one party back up to 50%.
The ANC believes that. The ANC doesn't believe that they were punished by the voters. Yeah. They believed that those who could have put them back into power abstained from voting. So according to the ANC, the people did not vote.
Sure.
It's not to say the people voted against them. Exactly. That's according to them. Okay. You understand? Look, it may be true, but who said those 20 million who abstained or absconded from vote, potential voters, when they come back and decide to vote, come the local government elections in 2026 or the 2029 national elections, who said they will still vote for the parties they had voted for? I want to agree with Helen Zille that I don't think we will ever have an outright majority in the next two or three elections, national ones, 2029 and 2035. I don't think there'll be an outright. Our politics and elections are going to go the same way as it has happened in countries like Kenya, whereby in Ghana, whereby
in Zambia,
well, the founding liberation ruling party movement will die its natural death, then reinvent itself at a very later stage. Like it will have to be a rebirth, and this is where the likes of Kgalema Motlanthe's statements come in.
Sure,
and Dr. Motlanthe, when he said, you know, sometimes you have to collapse a structure. When you can't keep on fixing the foundation.
Yeah.
And the roof.
Sometimes the house must bend down.
It must bend
for
down
for you to rebuild it.
Yes, to rebuild it. Yeah. And, you know, remove that whole thing and start afresh. And and that's the only thing that's going to save the ANC. This thing of putting matters under the carpet or the plasters on a wound that you didn't clean, because that's what the ANC is doing. They are putting a plaster and bandages on wounds that they did not clean. You understand? And I listened to President Ramaphosa in his closing remarks of the National Week saying simple things, Fresh. He was saying the leaders of the ANC must stop living large, showing off, showing as if they are better than the people they are leading, the cars they drive, and the clothes they wear. And he went to the extent of saying
the conspicuous consumption.
Yeah.
Yes.
And the tweeting to say they must stop fighting on Twitter, calling and showing off on Twitter. And let me tell you politically what I said to myself. The president is missing the point. He says ANC leaders must stop doing that, showing off while they are leading the poor. They must behave like the poor.
Humble yourself.
Humble yourself. But the government itself is not humbling itself. The president increased the size of the cabinet. The president is driving with blue lights. They are driving super German cars. Why does it start with the government? Forget the ANC leaders.
So what would you rather President Ramaphosa's security detail do? Was we buy from BRICS, have a Mahindra?
Exactly. Why don't they drive with Mahindras? And there's nothing wrong with Mahindra. Or BRICS, the GMC vehicles? What do you call them? Not the Great China, GM Wall, Great Wall Motors.
Oh, yes, it's from China. Yes.
I mean, they've got the Havals. Those are part of the BRICS member. Why do they drive the AQ5s and the AQ7s and the X5s and all those things? So the government, President Ramaphosa, should not say ANC leaders must humble themselves. Are you going to say Fikile Mbalula must stop wearing Gucci? It's his money. It's his choice. Understand? The government, with government money, the ministers, they must stop wearing Gucci with government money. What I'm saying is, let the government stop using BMW. Let President Ramaphosa stop driving in 7 Series. He must take his own car. He's got a Maybach, for that matter. Why is he using state monies to can have 5 security vehicles protecting him? And why in supercars? Why do we have a government renting offices?
I'm gonna speak like previous ministers have said. But if the ministerial handbook says, who am I to say to the ministerial handbook, wait a minute,
Fresh,
it's a lie.
Yeah, but the ministerial handbook, who wrote it? Is it not a politician?
But that's my point, though, and I'm going to repeat, and we've said this before. If you feel the system doesn't work, change the system.
And I'm saying,
because politicians will do what politicians do.
Yes.
If the ministerial handbook says I'm entitled to X amount, I will go for X amount.
But these are the same people who make that law. So I'm saying, I'm challenging them to say, if you are going to live this opulent lifestyle,
yeah,
start as a minister, as an MP, you know, let those people, because remember, these ministers don't come from outside. They sure. come from the voted in political office bearers.
Sure.
Understand? You cannot say people must not stop living a lavish lifestyle while you give them money to can live and lead a lavish lifestyle at the taxpayer's money. I mean, you look at the cost. I've listened to the cost of NEFSA's dropping. We don't have money for that. The Minister of Higher Education is driving with a BMW 7 Series. Why doesn't he drive with a Toyota Corolla?
And the biggest irony is he's communist.
Yeah, no, but it's no longer the communist one. Now the Minister of Education.
Oh, yes.
They've separated the ministries to create jobs for other departments. I mean, I listened to the argument regarding the ANC talking about the government of national unity. Their response is that, yes, they didn't increase the number of cabinet. They had to accommodate the others
so that
you can form the government. Yeah, I mean, everything it has to do with spending millions of rands on political office bearers and public offices, instead of channeling those monies towards the need, towards basic education, towards, you know, correctional services facilities that are inhumane in this instance. You look at the police, don't have vehicles to can combat crime. And yet, one vehicle that is used by the Minister of Police, let me tell you, one BMW 745i, it's costing 1.3, 1.4 million. That money can buy at least four or five buggies that the police will need to can do their work.
Sure.
So why doesn't the minister say, don't buy me a 1.5 million vehicle, take that money and go and buy vehicles? They don't have, first, let me tell you, if you are a leader, you don't have. If you break the rule for a good cause,
yes, sir.
Hlaudi Motsoeneng's case, Hlaudi Motsoeneng went against, and by the way, he won his case in court. The court ruled in his favor last week regarding the case he faced in for the SABC for paying the artists their money.
Or the legends, where they were paying, I think 50,000 rand each.
Yes, he won that case. The court cleared him. So this guy didn't steal. Now, if you go against the book, which book? The ministerial handbook as a minister.
Sure.
And I'm a minister, let's say, of transport. And I say, as a minister of transport, there are no school buses for school children. My colleague from a basic education, I'm not going to buy myself a 7 Series vehicle to do my duties. I will drive my own car to go to work. Please take this money to buy vehicles. I give you the money for vehicles.
Sure.
Buy vehicles that will transport school children or public transport. As a minister of transport, I'm increasing the number of buses that are moving between Soshanguve and Tshwane Center. You understand? You are doing things against the book, but you are doing something of goodwill.
But how many politicians will operate like that? Like, for instance, you look at Zamani Saul in the Northern Cape. Who did that.
He did that, yes.
I think he bought ambulances. Like a Gayton McKenzie, who says, rather take my salary and let me donate it somewhere else.
Yes.
Your average person is in government to serve themselves, not to serve the people. So you think people are going to now start foregoing the good life when there's a saying, we're not in the struggle so that we can be poor.
But that's the problem of us revoting those people into power. And this is a typical ANC, and the ANC people can be unhappy with me. But when you look at it, there are good people. You have mentioned Zamani Saul from the Northern Cape.
Yeah.
There's people I remember as much as he was never my favorite politician. At some stage when, what do you call this guy, the retired former minister of SOEs, the Indian gentleman is retired now. He's a former minister of finance and SARS commissioner. How do we forget him?
Pravin Gordhan.
Pravin Gordhan.
Yes.
You know, when Pravin became, I vividly recall, I was still in government department at that time, when he became a minister of trade and industry at some stage, he refused to buy a new vehicle, and the vehicle that was available for him to use was an Audi A6, and he said, I'm very happy, an Audi A6 is a very comfortable and good vehicle, and I can continue using it. You understand? So you do
have, but that's because he never goes to Cubana there to party, so he doesn't care about
He doesn't care about being seen with a nicer, better vehicle. But I think with this government of national unity, because they've got people like Gating McKenzie, they've got the PAC there and the DA, which has been making noise about government spending.
Yeah.
Let them now go and instill that kind of culture to say, I do not need a vehicle with this amount. I do not need... I mean, these people you are talking about dropping their lifestyle. What did they do before? Where were they before? There's nothing dropping your lifestyle fresh. I'm sitting here. I've got no income or little income.
Yeah.
If I become a minister, it's already a better thing.
Sure.
Understand? Now, what more do you want? What more do you want when your life has already been verbetered? You know, it's a better life now. It's better than what it was before. What more do you want? Because you're supposed to serve the people. You're supposed to be plowing back to the people. It's not your money, for God's sake.
Does this then not speak to what the EFF have been saying, that members of parliament and even council members must have a minimum of one post-matric qualification? Because then you are qualified at something and can be a professional at something.
Yes.
So that politics doesn't become your profession and your bread and butter.
Actually, besides the EFF, the current Minister of Human Settlements, Mamoloko Kubayi,
yes, sir.
Just before the parliament was selected and all that, she issued a statement. She's serving in the ANC Education Development Committee to say, hey, ministers who are appointed with matric only, there is a bursary, please go and apply.
Yes.
And be qualified and be educated. You know, for me, that said, here is one of them inviting them to say, so that you should not stay in that position and come out after 5 years, if you last 5 years.
With nothing.
With nothing.
Nothing to
here
show for
is it. A bursary for political office bearers and MPs. Go to school and study. You will not steal after that because you will have something to do after. You would have had a 5-year experience if you never worked before. You would have, like, Gating McKenzie and the Patriotic Alliance, they've deployed people who have never worked before.
Sure.
And now they have an opportunity to can gain 5 years experience as employees or political office bearers, and they can study and they will come out after. But no, these ones who go partying, who waste time in partying, and they are deployed because of shouting vivas louder than others.
Yeah.
Those are the problem creators, because they know.
The ones you know, you'll see them at the Durban July.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see them at the
Makufe and all others, and flying to Dubai. And that's why they steal, because they want to maintain this opulent lifestyle. They don't steal because they are hungry. They're stealing because they want to maintain the opulent lifestyle at the expense of taxpayers' money and public monies. And that's where the problem is. But I think the EFF has been correct. I mean, they even encouraged their own leader when Julius Malema came into political position. I mean, you remember people used to laugh to say he had age
would work
in matric. Look at Julius today. He went to school, questionable or not, but people have studied. Most of the leadership of the EFF has gone to school, and that's what we should be encouraging. I mean, we are looking at the Free State now. There's crisis in the Free State. With the ANC leadership is infighting there for positions. We have seen the premier. First of all, the first mistake that happened in the Free State is that the ANC went against their policy. There are two centers of power. The premier is not the chairperson of the province.
Jeez.
You understand? Now the premier has reshuffled HODs without consulting and telling other people that she reports to Thuli House. But she's elected by the constituents of the ANC in the Free State.
Exactly.
Look what she has done. She has taken an HOD of, for example, transportation, who have qualification and honors or a master's in that, and place the person somewhere else, of agriculture. This gentleman has a master's degree in agriculture, has been an HOD. Now you remove the person to place them at something that he doesn't even have a clue of what is going on there. You know what did the HOD did? HOD is equivalent to a DG in the province. Said to the premier, I'm not going today. That you are leading me to failure. Buy me out for the remainder of my term. I'm not taking the job.
Exactly.
He has said to the premier, then pay me out. Let me leave. I was appointed in a post that I'm qualified for.
Exactly.
You are removing me for your own political shenanigans. I'm not taking it. That's a principal decision. I respect that man who says, I'm qualified agricultural person. I'm employed to do agricultural work in the Ministry of Agriculture or the Department of Agriculture. You are removing me for no reason. And those are the crises we are sitting with. The deploying or putting people in fields or areas that they are not experts in. That's why I was happy when President Ramaphosa brought Aaron Motsoaledi back to health.
Yeah.
Not to say he was doing bad at Home Affairs,
sure.
But I'm saying you take a medical doctor, you put him in a position of being a minister of health, and I think that makes more sense.
And you know, when you look at lawmakers, and I think the fact that we even call them lawmakers should set the bar in terms of what we expect from them,
yeah.
In terms of that input. But if you're going to put lawmakers there that have not necessarily studied beyond a certain level, but are running South Africa Incorporated, because it's like running a corporation. You're never going to bring in people into your corporation that are not qualified.
We have more matriculants as ministers now, thanks to the DA.
Mm.
Thanks to the DA, we have more ministers with matric only.
Yeah.
It's good to have matric.
Sure.
But why wouldn't we amend our laws to say, to occupy a political office,
sure.
These are the minimum requirements.
It's like that with any other position.
Yes.
So we need a minimum 10 years work experience. We need a minimum of this qualification.
And you know, when we did it in 1994, it was understood fresh that people were from prison, people were from exile, there was apartheid, therefore you could have not expected African people to have experience. It's that years after.
Yeah.
For
those that bothered must be rewarded.
Yes. And I said, we have a lot of, I know a lot of ministers or political office bearers and DGs who went to study.
Sure.
I've been in government for 27 years. I still studied until as recent as last year that I wanted to improve, you know, whether it's a short course and what. But for them not, for us not to have a prerequisite to occupy that office. I mean, how are you going to read and make laws and become a member of the legislature?
Sure.
When you can't even read law, how are you going to make laws? That's why we are sitting with laws today that are not being implemented, because those who are supposed to implement those laws, they don't understand what they're supposed to implement, and you can't blame them. Mm. I can't blame MPs when they go and howl and shout in parliament. Instead of making rules and laws that are going to govern the country, they don't know what they are doing.
Yeah.
And that's the situation we are sitting at.
So, guys, we decided that because we had missed politics last week, we're going to give you two parts this week. We're going to take a break. Thanks for tuning into part one of hashtag politics on Wow What a Week. We'll be back with part two tomorrow.